Well, thank you all. It's great to be with you today. I live down in Fresno, and my colleague Greg Burt lives up in Elk Grove. We both work for California Family Council. I'm the president. We have an office up in Sacramento, right across the street from the Capitol, but my wife and kids and I live in Fresno, so we also have an office down there where I usually work. So coming to Modesto is kind of nice. It's meeting in the middle. So great to be with you all today. I don't know just really briefly how familiar you are with California Family Council. Are any of you on our email list or Facebook page or anything? Okay. Handful of hands. That's good. If you're not familiar with us, let me just give you a very brief synopsis on kind of who we are and what we do. We are known as a family policy council. There's about 40 states around the country that have family policy councils. And we basically serve as a watchdog on issues related to life, family, and liberty. Our mission statement is advancing God's design for life, family, and liberty through California's church, capital, and culture. So as you might imagine, here in the state of California, that is never a dull assignment. We always feel like there's something happening. When I talk with people around the country, my colleagues that are in other states, I say it's not always fun living here, but at least it's never boring. And that has especially been true on the legislative front these last several years. I wanted to give you just recently, I could go through dozens of bills that we have been watching just from this one legislative session, much less things that have happened over the last 5 to 10 years. But I really wanted to focus on about 5 key bills that I think would be wise for you to know about and to be prepared to kind of understand what's coming. And it's something that I want to just point out to people. A lot of times it can be very discouraging to be in Sacramento, or if you're really deep in the weeds, if you're coming to the Capitol on a regular basis to testify in opposition to bills, if you are working on a grassroots level with other school boards or with parents or things like that, I know that can be incredibly taxing and time-consuming. In fact, on both those issues, testimony, school board issues, working with families and parents, my friend Erin Friday is going to be speaking a little bit later today, and she's coming up, I think, right after me. You are going to be very blessed and encouraged by, I think, her tenacity and her testimony of how she is fighting on all of these issues. So I'm excited to be getting to be the tee-up act for her in a minute. But I wanted to give you a second part real quick on this. For our organization, we have 2 things. We have our mission statement, which I mentioned, but then we also have a vision statement. And the vision statement is not a state of California that is winning on every issue when it comes to politics, because we're not going to win. We're not going to have true success just by electing the right people into office in Sacramento. Amen? We're not even going to win by electing the right people to office nationally in Washington, D.C., or by putting the right people on the Supreme Court. That by itself is not going to change anything. And that's why for California Family Council, our mission statement is God's people, everybody in this room, God's people living as faithful citizens of both heaven and earth. Biblically faithful, civically responsible, and culturally impactful. And that's what we want to equip all of you to do on a regular basis. And that's why we publish so much information on our website. That's why we host lobby days and March for Life events and all those types of things. In fact, I'll tell you, if you come to our website, you sign up on our email list outside at our booth. We actually have a Capitol Hill 101 lobby training this coming week on the 19th. So we'd love to have you come and join. That's totally free. It's going to be online. You can watch it at home from your computer if you'd like to do that. But let me go ahead and give you a couple of bills that I think are really, I'll call them the good, the bad, and the ugly. Any Clint Eastwood fans in the room? Maybe. Okay, all right. At least someone. I'm worried because now I just turned 40 last year, and I've come to the horrible realization that some of my movie references and things, like, younger people do not even know what these are. We just hired a brand new staff member who is fantastic. She's this wonderful gal who just graduated from Vanguard University. She's a member of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills down in Chino with Pastor Jack Hibbs. Her name is Sophia Lori. She's wonderful, but she was also born in the year 2000, which is way too young. Sorry, Chloe. I know you were also another young person, but it makes the rest of us feel very old. So anyway, I just had to make sure you actually knew what that reference was. All right. So the good, the bad, and the ugly. Number one, there were a handful of bills, believe it or not, that Gavin Newsom, Governor Newsom, actually vetoed this year. One of them was AB 957. Now, this is good. This bill basically would have put a thumb on the scale. It would have forced judges to place a child who was experiencing gender dysphoria with whichever one of their parents was affirming of that gender dysphoria if there was a custody dispute situation. So let me paint a picture for you. Imagine that you have two parents who are having struggles in their marriage. They decide that they're going to split up, and their child is experiencing maybe some sort of gender dysphoria. In fact, maybe that's even what led to the breakup of their relationship. One parent says, I think we need to go start putting our child, our daughter, on cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers. We need to prepare to get them surgery to affirm their gender identity, just like Chloe's testimony that you guys heard earlier today. The other parent says, absolutely not. I've been reading about this. I've listened to Chloe's testimony. I've talked with other people. This is incredibly destructive. At bare minimum, we should be waiting until our child is an adult before we even do anything like this. There's no way that a minor child should be undergoing these irreversible, mutilating, horrible procedures. Well, if they go in front of a judge, this bill would have said that the judge would be required to place the child with whichever one of those two parents was the one who affirmed that gender identity, as opposed to the one that was affirming their biological identity. So, remarkably, shockingly, Gavin Newsom vetoed that bill. And that is an answer to prayer. We had a ton of people who came up to the Capitol and testified in opposition to it. We did a huge rally on the steps of the Capitol on August 21st. Erin Friday spoke at that rally and shared some of her personal testimony and story. And that is a huge, huge answer to prayer and to a testament to all the hard work that parents across the state did in calling, in emailing, in acting to try to make that happen. Now, I do want to warn you, Gavin Newsom did, even in a good thing like this, I wish I could say it was 100% good, but even in the veto message that Gavin Newsom wrote, he kind of had this little get-out-of-jail-free card in the way he signed this. He goes, yeah, I'm signing this, I'm vetoing it for all these different reasons, but don't worry, we all know that judges kind of already do this anyway, so let's just kind of keep it hush-hush. We don't have to require it by law. We'll still make sure that this can happen, but we just don't want to, we don't want to make it quite so formalized. So even when there is a good, there is sometimes a non-silver lining. But let me get to some of the actual really bad ones. Number one, AB 1078. This is a bill that deals with book bans. Now, if you're watching the news, if you ever hear them talk about this, they will say, oh, can you believe that Christians want to ban books? This is horrible. Isn't this what they did in fascist countries during World War II, whether it's the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany? How could Christians and conservatives be so backwards and evil that they want to ban books? Well, what they don't tell you is that two things I'll say. Let me just say, number one, if a book is available on Amazon with free 2-day shipping, is it really banned? No. We're not talking about that even. We are talking about, number two, requiring that schools do not put explicitly obscene materials within the easy access and reach of minor children in government-funded public schools. That's what we're talking about when the other side is mentioning book bans. And there have been states around the country and even school districts around our state that have tried to say, these types of concepts, these types of issues, we don't want minor children to have access to these without parental oversight, without parental involvement. So we're going to remove them from circulation inside the school. Now, if a parent wants to buy that book on Amazon, they want to go to a library and check it out somewhere else, any parent would, of course, be free to do that. It's not even saying that, now, I think that no children should be exposed to these types of materials and these types of books, but it's not saying that a parent couldn't do it that. It's saying that the school librarian could not put them in there. Well, this bill, which Gavin Newsom did sign, bans the bans. In other words, it says to a school district, we know that you think that you have local control. We know that you think that the parents in your local area elected you to make these decisions for your school board. Just kidding. You don't actually have that authority. We're going to take that away from you and make that now a Sacramento decision and say you do not have the authority or the ability to protect your children at the local level as you see fit. And tragically, that was signed by Governor Newsom. Another bill, Assembly Bill 5, AB 5. This is a bill from Assemblymember Rick Zabur. He is from the Southern California area. Just to give you an idea of the types of people and organizations that have influence in the legislature in Sacramento, Rick Zabur retired or resigned from his previous position to run for assembly and win assembly. The organization that he ran most recently, the statewide organization that he ran most recently, was Equality California. Equality California is the state's largest and most active, most aggressive pro-LGBTQ organization here in California. And they decided, hey, why lobby the legislators when we can just elect them to office directly instead? So their former executive director is now this assembly member from Southern California. A bill that he introduced, AB 5, is one that deals with teacher training. And it basically would require mandatory regular training for teachers so that they could help be supportive of their LGBTQ students. Now, that sounds good. I agree that, of course, we should be compassionate and loving and gracious and Christ-like to all students, no matter how they identify. But what's really concerning is this bill goes way beyond that, and it also, as part of the training, slides in some requirements that teachers learn how to spot non-affirming parents. Now, I'll tell you why that's important when we get to our worst of the worst bill here in a little bit. But the idea that you're now going to essentially start having parents treated automatically with suspicion if they just hold to a traditional, historical, Christian view of sexuality and gender, having that be something that is required training on a regular basis, it's not something that, oh, we're going to put up one poster or we're going to send out one email, but that you're going to have an in-service type of a training and this level of indoctrination that every teacher is going to start having to go through, that is going to dramatically shift the way that parents are viewed and the way that teachers interact with them, the types of things they tell them and don't tell them. All right, three more. Number one is, this next one is ACA 5. Now, this one's a little bit different than the other ones. This deals with the whole issue of Proposition 8. And some of you may be old enough to remember, you may have voted for Proposition 8 back in the year 2008. This was the bill that defined marriage as between one man and one woman in the California State Constitution. Now, remarkably, 15 years ago, this bill actually did pass in the state of California. So in our state constitution currently, it says only marriage between a man and a woman shall be valid or recognized in the state of California. But immediately, as soon as that bill was passed, the activist forces, including Equality California, I mentioned before, they and other groups started suing the state of California over this. It went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court at that point was much more liberal, much more progressive, and they overturned Proposition 8. So it has now been enjoined in California's constitution for these last, they overturned it in 2013. So for the last 10 years, it's been enjoined. Well, this bill, you would wonder, well, what's the big deal about this? Well, this bill essentially would formally remove Proposition 8 from the state constitution and would essentially instead enshrine same-sex marriage and really no specific definitions on marriage in the state constitution. It would be much more confusing and much more dangerous, I think, in the long run, because it doesn't explicitly in the language have any limits on the number of people, the age of people, the relation of people, how closely they're related or anything like that in defining marriage. But the real concern about this bill, the reason I wanted to bring it up to you, is a reason I want you to just be reminded to pray for our legislators, even those who sometimes might be considered on our side. Because the really discouraging and sad thing about this bill was that when this bill passed in both the Senate and the Assembly, there are three positions you can take on a bill whenever you are in the room getting ready to vote. You can vote yes, which makes sense. You can vote no, which makes sense. But then there's also something called no vote recorded. No vote recorded means usually that either you were absent that day, maybe you were sick, maybe you were on assignment for somewhere else, or you can literally be in the room and you can just choose to abstain. Now, for counting purposes, that basically counts the same as a no vote for counting purposes. But it means, just to be honest, it means that you did not have the courage of your convictions to vote one way or the other. So when this bill, ACA 5 passed, it passed both houses with zero no votes. Now, there's two parties up in Sacramento. In California, you guys probably know that one party has a much higher number of people. I'm being a little bit careful here because we're in a church and, you know, you have to be a little careful what you say for IRS purposes. But I will just say it was not surprising that one of the political parties was going to vote overwhelmingly for this. But the thing that was really shocking about this was that the minority party, not a single member of the minority party, actually bothered to push the button and vote no. Not a single one. And in both houses, nobody in the Assembly initially spoke out against it, and nobody in the Senate, save one person, actually spoke out against it. And even that one person who spoke out, when it came time to vote, he didn't actually vote no. So it's, I think, a reminder that sometimes we cannot just expect, oh, we've elected good people. I know my legislator. He's a good guy. She's a good gal. We want to just trust them. We need to still hold our own elected officials accountable for how they vote. Because what they tell us sometimes back home and how they're going to be voting back home is not always how they actually vote up in Sacramento. So those are the good and the bad. I want to finish with one final bill, which is the ugly. In 2022, there was a bill called SB 107 that was passed. This bill essentially said that if there was a child from another state that came to California that was trying to get gender-affirming care, the state of California would not extradite that child based on the laws of another state. So the way they put this was the transgender child refugee bill. The idea being that if a child from Texas came here with their parents, and in Texas it was illegal to have sex reassignment surgery, these gender affirming procedures, California would say, we'll let you have those procedures here and we will not send you back to Texas if Texas tries to arrest you. That was bad because it did not say that the child had to be here with their own parents. It could have been with a family member. It could have been with another guardian or just some other random adult. There was no specific requirement that a parent be the one that brought them here for those procedures. But that was last year. This year, the really bad one is AB 665. Essentially, this one takes what is happening to students in other states and it widens it and includes now every child above the age of 12 in the state of California. And it basically says for purposes of gender-affirming care, a child 12 years of age or older can essentially legally emancipate themselves and check themselves into a residential treatment facility if it's for the purposes of gender-affirming care. How many of you have kids or grandkids or nephews or nieces that are 12 years of age or older? Okay. Remember I mentioned before part of the huge danger with the bill about the teacher training is how it's going to force teachers to start looking at parents with a lot of suspicion. I'm not trying to freak you guys out too much, but I have to give you, again, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The ugly truth of this bill, the brutal fact of this bill is that teachers are now going to, through AB 5, they're going to be looking at parents and saying, these parents seem like they maybe are not affirming parents. And this child seems to have a friend who's transgender. They seem to be maybe acting in a way that shows some gender dysphoria. When that child turns 12, the teacher could ask or encourage or invite that child to choose to use this other bill, AB 665, to check themselves into a residential treatment facility for the purposes of receiving gender-affirming counseling, gender-affirming care, and possibly even going on those cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and going down the full road to medicalization. Originally, before AB 665 passed, if a child was going to want to remove themselves from their own home without parental permission, without parental consent or oversight, there had to be a credible threat or a credible report that that child was actually being abused in their own home, which I will say makes sense. I think we all agree that if there's a child who is actually facing real physical or sexual or mental or emotional abuse, like actual verifiable documented abuse, of course that child should be able to be removed from their home and be protected from an abusive parent like that, of course. But this bill specifically deletes that requirement, not only that the abuse be proven, the abuse does not even have to be alleged by the child. You might have, in this case, a lot of parents who would say, or children who would say, well, yeah, I feel like I'm trans, but I don't want to get my mom or dad in trouble. I don't want them to go to jail because I've got other kids. I've got younger siblings in the house and I don't want them to get in trouble just because of how I'm feeling. Well, one of these teachers could say, oh, don't worry about it. Your parent won't get in trouble. You can just choose yourself to move out and move into one of these residential treatment facilities with counselors who will be able to help you through this transition process. That is what AB 665 essentially would do. And that is what I'm sure we're probably going to talk about it on the Q&A session later, but Erin very bravely came up and testified against that multiple times in her capacity as an attorney, talking about how dangerous this would be. And yet, Governor Newsom signed it. So that will be going into effect this coming year. So for every one of you who raised your hands, parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, it is going to be incredibly important for us to be highly vigilant for all children, grandchildren, nephews, nieces that may be experiencing any form of gender dysphoria, especially if they are going to public school. So I'm a little bit over my time, so I want to be gracious and listen to make sure I don't completely bulldoze everything. But I will be here the rest of the day along with my colleague Greg Burt. If you'd like to find out more information, you can come up and meet us in the back. And then, of course, I'll be here, I think, for the panel discussion as well after the break. But I just want to leave you with one little note of courage and hope. That's good to have after all that, right? There is a famous theologian named Pastor Richard John Newhouse, and he was a civil rights leader. He marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, and he had a phenomenal reminder that I think of often when I think of how discouraging it can be to live in California and look at all the legislative issues that we battle with. And he talked about why, as Christians, we should not and cannot and must not despair. And he said, "For we have not the right to despair, for despair is a sin." Now, if he ended there, that would be pretty depressing. Just buck up. Come on. Stop being despairing. But he doesn't end it there. He says, as Christians, we do not have the right to despair because despair is a sin. Ultimately, I think what he means on that, it's not a sin to be discouraged or sad or even depressed. But I think what he was saying there in the word despair is to lose sight of who ultimately controls everything and who is ultimately sovereign over our lives and our society. If we lose sight of that, that type of despair is a sin because we're doubting God. But this is what he said. We have not the right to despair because despair is a sin. And we have not the reason to despair, quite simply because Christ has risen. And if we believe that, we do not have to despair, but we can have hope that no matter how dark things are, God is going to give us opportunities to ultimately win and prevail in the end. Thank you all for being here, and looking forward to talking to you after the break.